5 p.m. Hello and welcome aboard for a new edition of American Hit Radio. Welcome aboard indeed. You're probably going to need to climb onto a boat the way it's raining outside.
It's not as bad as it is in other places.
Well, it's been on and off today, pretty intense. But I'm Tom Ryan. I'm your host. With me, my lovely wife and co-host, Heidi Morales Ryan. If you've been listening at all, you realize that we usually try to, we're on a theme-based program lately.
We got a thing going on.
Quite a while. We started by looking at albums that never made the top 40, got into the mid-60s, and at that point I decided I was going to go back and look also at albums that did make the top 40, having an equal number of each. 500 that did, 500 that didn't, all of them being among what I consider to be the most important albums, also in most cases my favorites. Now, there's obviously an awful lot of favoritism going on when these lists, when they are made up.
And you're no different.
Of course not. Of course not. I mean, what else is a list of the best of anything except for a list regarding subjectivity? Now, we started in 1964, and we're counting through the top 500 of the top 40, which is my favorite 500 albums, starting in 1964. So since that's the year, and we're talking about albums that made the top 40, I guess it's no surprise that this list starts off incredibly Beatle-heavy. I didn't even realize myself just how Beatle-heavy it would be. For example, this is our last album for the year 1964. It's album number 12. Out of the 12 albums that made the top 40 that we have covered, six of them are Beatles albums, have been Beatles. Six out of 12. That's how ubiquitous the Beatles were. As I was writing about this, trying to think of what to say about the album, just almost freeform, I wrote this just earlier. The Beatles juggernaut rolled on through 1964 until even the haters started to join the ranks of fans. Their success was undeniable, and it became obvious that denial or ignorance would not make the phenomenon go away. A Hard Day's Night played a huge role in winning new converts as moms took their kids to the movies and became charmed by the group and entranced by at least some of the music. Even the American jazz musicians who deeply resented the stylistic change that derailed their careers started to record Beatles material for their own records. In America, their fourth album on Capitol, the one released in December of 1964 and the one that we are covering today, was called Beatles 1965, or Beatles 65, and it was a victory lap of sorts, and perhaps the only American album release that did not represent an obvious exponential growth for the band. A Hard Day's Night featured 100% original compositions, but on Beatles 65, they were reverting to a few cover tunes once again. Nevertheless, the overall sound of the band had matured somewhat. Perhaps it was due to exhaustion, but most of the songs on Beatles 65 sound somewhat darker and less energized than their earlier material, with a bit of self-reflection that conveyed that darker side to the songwriting. It may not have been a profound change from what came before, but Beatles 65 proves that in less than 1 year, the band not only changed pop music forever, but then they also changed themselves. And to think that this was only the beginning. Rather incredible. The album starts off with a song sung by John, written mostly by John. He had said that he had actually written the song for another British pop star called Tommy Quickley, who actually had the temerity to reject the song. So the Beatles kept it, did it, and they opened up this album with that tune. John was actually sort of proud of the song, probably surprised that somebody wouldn't have taken it when he offered it to them. His quote about this is saying, "I remember Dick James," that was the Beatles publisher, "coming up to me after we did this one and saying, 'You're getting better now.' That was a complete story. Apparently before that, he thought that my songs wandered off." Well, here's John singing a song about more or less confronting a girlfriend about an unfaithful relationship called No Reply.
"This happened once before, when I came to your door, no reply. They said it wasn't you, but I saw you peep through your window. I saw the light, I saw the light. I know that you saw me, as I looked up to see your face. I tried to telephone, they said you were not home, that's a lie. Cause I know where you've been, I saw you walk in your door. Another man in my place. If I were you, I'd realize that I love you more than any other guy. And I'll forgive the lies that I heard before. You said you were not home. That's a lie. Cause I know where you've been. I saw you walk in your door. I nearly died. I nearly died. Cause you walked hand in hand with another man in my place. No reply. No reply.
The opening track on the American album called Beatles 65. I'm covering American albums in my list because these are the albums that charted in America. If I were to choose the British version of the album, for example, from this era, it would be the album Beatles for Sale. But if I did pick that album, then I'd be cheating because I'd be seeing that the Beatles never made the top 40 because the British version of the albums did not make the top 40. So since my project is mostly based around albums that I'm writing the essays about the alternative albums, you can't say that the Beatles albums are alternative. That would be absurd. So it more or less forces me to confront the albums exactly as we heard them in America. And that's why in this country we had Beatles 65, while in Europe and Great Britain they had the far superior collection called Beatles for Sale. I say far superior because that album had 14 songs, where this one has 11. And this album, Beatles 65, actually is comprised of about half of those songs that were on Beatles for Sale. Maybe 7 or 8 of them. A hit single that the Beatles did not put on an LP in Great Britain because they considered singles to be a separate entity, and by doing so were giving value to their fans. And then one other track that was actually left over from A Hard Day's Night that the American label decided they couldn't squeeze onto the previous 11-song album, which is rather absurd, obviously. So starting with this dark song, the first thing that happens is you can hear that there's like, if nothing else, there's a certain maturity going on. It's like this is the first time that you'll hear like some really powerful phrasing for a Beatles song. If I were you, I'd realize that I love you more than any other guy, and I'd forgive the lies that I heard before when you gave me no reply. It's sort of much more direct and darker than anything the Beatles had done up until this time. In that sense, that's where the maturation comes in. They're willing to basically face this darker side on this album, where up until this point, everything was really about just almost youthful energy, exuberance. A lot of the exuberance is gone, and it's replaced with like the very next song on the album. On both the British and the American album, they shared the same opening tracks. This is I'm a Loser, a song that was actually considered for a single until Lennon came up with I Feel Fine. But what you also hear, this is interesting too, because as we're going through our countdown chronologically, I said 6 of the albums that we've played have been Beatles albums for 1964. Up until this point, I believe that 2 of them have been Dylan albums. And each of them are not quite subconsciously, I think quite consciously, influencing the other. On the one hand, you have Dylan going electric, not just putting out folk albums with him with his acoustic guitar, as his first 4 albums were exactly that, just him on an acoustic guitar. All of a sudden, the Beatles hit in January, and Dylan's next album has electric instrumentation on it. He records Subterranean Homesick Blues, things like that, an entire side of the album.
Keeping up with the competition.
Right. So Dylan is going electric, and at the same time, the Beatles are listening to Dylan, and they're trying to become a little bit more mature in their topicality and in what they're conveying. Thus, John Lennon feeling capable of singing about the fact that he feels like a loser, which is hard to, I guess, for kids to imagine. Paul talks about it openly. He was an interesting quote. He says, looking back on it, I think that songs like I'm a Loser were John's cries for help. We were used to listen to quite a lot of country and Western songs, and they were all about sadness and I lost my truck.
Tear my beer.
Right. So it was quite acceptable to sing I'm a Loser. It's only later that you think, God, what might have been going on? I think it was very brave of John. It's Paul's quote. Here's I'm a Loser.
I'm a loser, I'm a loser, and I'm not what I appear to be. Of all the love I have won or have lost, there is one love I should never have crossed. She was a girl in a million, my friend. I should have known she would win in the end. I'm a loser, and I love someone who's near to me. I'm a loser, and I'm not what I appear to be. Although I laugh and I act like a clown, beneath this mask I am wearing a frown. My tears are falling like rain from the sky. Is it for her or myself that I cry? I'm a loser, and I lost someone who's near to me. I'm a loser, and I'm not what I appear to be. Have I done to deserve such a fate? I realize I have left it too late. And so it's true, pride comes before a fall. I'm telling you so that you won't lose all. I'm a loser, and I lost someone who's near to me. I'm a loser, and I'm not what I appear to be.
Guess you could also say that there's a very distinctive country flavor on this album, something that was also relatively new. So in a lot of ways, I said, in the opening that the album wasn't an obvious, stylistic step forward, but it was definitely, in a lot of ways, I suppose it was, because you really hear the band branching out now and expressing themselves more openly, not worrying about whether or not their themes were juvenile enough, right, so to speak, This next song is another great example of that. I mean, three dark songs in a row from the Beatles. The American cover of the album is four shots of the Beatles doing a photo session, silly ones, holding an umbrella, sitting with toys and such, and brooms, and just standing around and posing. But the British album cover was a close-up of their four faces. The Beatles are sort of staring back,
right,
not
very
smiling.
Mature looking.
Yeah, they look sort of exhausted. They look haggard in the photo. It was an odd choice. But if you were the band that just basically conquered America, released six albums in the United States, also made a film that caused the entire planet Earth to basically chase you down if ever you went out in public, you'd probably be pretty tired looking too. And maybe that's why you would write songs like No Reply or I'm a Loser or this one, which is another song about, you know, probably more morose than anything the Beatles had done up to this point, Babies in Black.
Babies in black and I'm feeling blue. Tell me, oh, what can I do? She thinks of him and so she dresses in black. And though he'll never come back, she's dressed in black. Oh dear, what can I do? Babies in black and I'm feeling blue. Tell me, oh, what can I do? Think of her, but she thinks only of him. And though it's only a whim, she thinks of him. Oh, how long will it take till she sees the mistake she has made? Dear, what can I do? Baby's in black and I'm feeling blue. Tell me, oh, what can I do? Can I do? She thinks of him, and so she dresses in black. And though he'll never come back, she's dressed in black. Oh dear, what can I do? Baby's in black, and I'm feeling blue. Tell me, oh, what can I do?
The three original songs, Lennon McCartney tunes, that opened up both the American album Beatles 65 and the British album Beatles for Sale. As I said, if you know, for bang for your buck, the British album is certainly the superior product for having more songs and for also for portraying the band in the correct chronological order and the way that they wanted the songs to be heard and seen. With their artwork and such, the British album actually had a gatefold cover, the first Beatles album to have a gatefold, where you could open it up and see the song titles inside and some information and additional
cool
pictures. But not in America. It was just another typical record sleeve. As I had mentioned, though, unlike Hard Day's Night, the British version, at least, which contained 13 songs and all of them written by Lennon McCartney, this album, they are... back to doing a few covers. Naturally, Chuck Berry is one of the people who they choose to go back to.
They love John Lennon.
What's that?
I said they love that well.
Absolutely, as did the Rolling Stones, of course. The Rolling Stones even more so, obviously.
Yes.
But John did a great job of singing Chuck Berry songs, and he really nails this one. Great rock and roll voice. You begin, you know, Lennon steps up to sing rock and roll music.
Just let me hear some of that rock and roll music. Any old way you choose it, it's got a backbeat, you can't lose it. Any old time you use it, gotta be rock and roll music. If you wanna dance with me, if you wanna dance with me. I got no kick against modern jazz, unless you try to play it too darn fast. Took my love on all across the tracks. South, they had a jubilee. Them Georgia folks, they had a jamboree. They're drinking homebrew from a wooden cup. The folks are dancing, they got all shook up. I started playing that rock and roll music. Any old time you use it, it's got a backbeat, you can't lose it. Any old time you use it, gotta be rock and roll music. If you wanna dance with me, if you wanna dance with me, don't get to hear them play a tango. And in the mood they take a mambo. It's way too early for the Congo. So keep a rockin' that piano. That's why I go for the rock and roll music. Any old time you use it, it's got a black beat, you can't blues it. Any old time you use it,
the rock and roll number to break up the melancholy that opens up Beatles 65.
With the ever-popular cha-cha-cha ending.
And, you know, it's funny, I never noticed that this album was a quote-unquote dark record when I was younger.
No, it seems light enough, like, when you say self-effacing.
I guess, yeah. Maybe the thing is, at the time, it was just the Beatles, and the Beatles were great, and you didn't really question it, and you'd hear the songs, and you'd just love them because they were so easy to sing along to, and the melodies are so rich. But beyond that, I guess being, you know, we were kids, we didn't think as much.
They got it past the censors, though.
Yeah. Well, I guess I wasn't, though, back then, or I wasn't really thinking about it in those terms, or that all of a sudden, if the themes are more mature, then they were over my head anyway. It wasn't until maybe...
It's like watching Bugs Bunny cartoons.
Right. How much humor did we miss then, you know? I guess you're right, exactly like that. Well, the next song is mostly a Paul composition. That's fairly obvious. But it's another song that's got an undercurrent of sadness about it. Very beautiful song, though. Soft-spoken and rather direct. It's called I'll Follow the Sun.
One day you'll look to see I've gone, for tomorrow may rain, so I'll follow the sun. Someday you'll know I was the one, but tomorrow may rain, so I'll follow the sun. And now the time has come, and so my love I must go. And though I lose a friend, in the end you will know. Oh, one day you'll find that I have gone, but tomorrow may rain, so I'll follow the sun. Tomorrow may rain, so I'll follow the sun. And now the time has come, and so my love I must go. And though I lose a friend, in the end you will know. Oh, one day you'll find that I have gone, but tomorrow may rain, so I'll follow the sun.
A song that actually, as I read, you know, liner notes, goes pretty far back for the Beatles. That actually goes back to written before they were even signed.
Really?
Back to the Quarrymen days. They used to basically do that song sort of like with a rockabilly feel.
Feel that.
I guess
there.
I could too. I mean, I've never heard that version, but apparently it was like somehow bootlegged and released at some point in time somewhere. And it was one of those songs that was sitting around, and I guess the Beatles didn't think it was rocking enough for the image that they were presenting as they got it after they were signed. You know, you need that upbeat positivity to draw everybody in. But I this is where, obviously, on this album, they said, you know, to heck with that. We can do anything we want to do.
Well, they had so many other songs that, as you point out, or just a little bit more morose.
Yes, exactly.
So, since that's a little downbeat, if you will.
But that's the other thing is it's also like as Paul said something about how he didn't want to fall into the trap of being the same all the time. And I guess after having three albums that were very positive and uplifting, love songs that were both energetic and mostly happy.
Right, that's like single facet Stone.
Yeah, it's like we don't need to keep doing that or we're going to become, you know, stereotyped. We're going to, you know,
pigeonholed.
I think what he said, he didn't want to fall into the Supremes trap where all the songs sounded similar.
Right.
You know? The idea was to keep changing things up. That's why they decided to take the drums off of that track. And Ringo's actually, the percussion on that is just literally slapping your thighs.
Really?
Along with the record. That's what's making the percussion.
Cool.
All right. One more song till we reach for the end of side one. It's another cover song. It was an original artist named Dr. Feelgood who recorded the version of this. That was first a moderate hit. I say, you know, the first Dr. Feelgood. There was a Dr. Feelgood group that came about in the late 70s, part of the English pub circuit. I don't believe there was any connection between the two. But the song was originally credited to Dr. Feelgood and the Interns. Sort of a song that was more popular in Britain than here. I think a lot of people in America considered this song to be a very, very odd for a Beatles song. If not an aberration, certainly unusual. And considering how these other songs are very, also quite different from what had come before, this is the song that most American kids would point out as saying, that's weird for the Beatles. John singing Mr. Moonlight.
You came to me one summer night, and from your beam you made my dream, and from the world you sent my girl. Cause we love you, Mr. Moonlight. Mr. Moonlight, come again, please. Here I am on my knees, begging if you please. And the night you don't come my way, stay, cause we love you, Mr. Moonlight. And the night you don't come my way, day, cause we love you, Mr. Moonlight. Mr. Moonlight, come again, please. Here I am on my knees, begging if you please. And the night you don't come my way, we love you, Mr. Moonlight. Mr. Moonlight. Mr. Moonlight. Mr. Moonlight.
The Beatles. We seem to cover the Beatles an awful lot on our program. I know that. And of course, by going back to 1964 as the starting point, it's inevitable, as I said earlier, that we're going to be stepping onto an awful lot of Beatles albums. And as you moved through 1964, especially the top 40 albums, we played 12 If six of them were Beatles albums, so far two of them were Rolling Stones albums. That's eight. Two were Dylan albums. That's 10. One was a Beach Boys album. That's 11. I think there was one album that wasn't done by a beat group. And that was that jazz album that we covered earlier. The title is eluding me at the moment. But we move into 1965 next week. No big surprises at first. But as time moves on, the list obviously becomes much more varied until eventually it's rather incredible to see what actually does come up. So I think that we're going to have more and more fun as we move forward with our list. And by the time we catch up to where we left off with the alternate top 40.
Oh, boy.
Boy, yeah, then we'll be all over the place.
It's going to get crazy.
Then we'll just have, the world will be our oyster. So we switch over Beatles 65 then to side two, as I remember it. And in typical Capitol cheapness, they only gave us five songs on side two, where they easily could have given us 12.
You jerks.
They could have easily given us 14. That's what they did in Great Britain. But they were only giving us 11 because they kept realizing
like
that
drug dealers, they're just giving you a taste.
Yeah. Well, they've, you know, hold off long enough, you can invent an album eventually. That is what does ultimately happen next.
Right.
They release an album called Beatles 6, VI, the Roman numeral 6, which is essentially the other half of the British album, Beatles for Sale. And yes, we will be covering that when we get to 1965. But we'll cross that bridge when we get there. Meanwhile, the first song on side two is one of the Carl Perkins songs covered by the Beatles. The Beatles are obviously very big Carl Perkins fans, big rockabilly fans. George, yes, obviously leaning heavily in that direction. Two of those Carl Perkins songs appear on this album, Beatles 65. Interestingly, both of them on side two, one opening the side and one closing the side. Here's the Carl Perkins tune that opens side two of Beatles 65. It's called Honey Don't.
Well, how come you say you will when you won't? Say you do, baby, when you don't. Let me know, honey, how you feel. Tell the truth now, is love real? But well, honey, don't. I say you will when you won't, honey, don't. Well, I love you, baby, and you ought to know. I like the way that you wear your clothes. Everything about you is so doggone sweet. You got that sand all over your feet. But, well, honey, don't. Honey, don't. Honey, don't. Honey, don't. Honey, don't. I say you will when you won't. Honey, don't. Ah, rock on, George, one time for me. Saturday night, Sunday morning, you don't look right. You've been out painting the town, baby, been stepping around. But well, honey, don't. I'll say, honey, don't. Honey, don't. Honey, don't. Honey, don't. I say you will when you won't. Honey, don't. I'll rock on George Beringo one time. Woo! Well, honey, don't.
here's an interesting fun fact about that tune. Obviously, the Beatles, being big Carl Perkins fans, they had, I think it was the last album, that when we went back to playing the album Something New, where we talked about the fact that the Beatles had an EP with four songs on it, and one of those songs was a Carl Perkins tune, Matchbox. And, of course, they do another Carl Perkins tune. We'll cover that later in the show. But this song, Honey Don't, when it was originally being performed live, John is the one who always sang it.
Huh.
But what happened, as we more or less had gotten, not on every album, but the Beatles were trying from the beginning to give something to Ringo on every album. He didn't get a song on Hard Day's Night. So, and since it didn't look like he was going to get one here either, John gave the song up and gave it to Ringo. So it's sort of, what's funny about that is, of course, John, there are versions of John singing this on the BBC that have been released. So that's covered. This song became more or less a definitive song of Ringo's for the Beatles. Since he didn't sing that many, it became sort of a trademark of his of sorts. But George Harrison was a huge fan of Carl Perkins. He even played with Carl Perkins a number of times. And I believe that there are recorded versions where George and Carl Perkins performed the song, trading verses together back and forth. And Paul has also, is a big Carl Perkins fan. And I think that maybe, I'm not positive if it was on that album that he did when he recorded the Russian album.
Yeah, I don't know that
the album
one.
For the Soviet Union. But I think that this might have been one of the songs that he recorded on that album as well. But he definitely has performed this song live. So one of the few Beatles songs that had that had been sung
touched.
Right, by all four members of the band. Next track up, let's see, after Honey Don't, we are back to an original composition. This is the song that Capitol saw fit in their, I'm sorry, I'm going to say it flat out, utter stupidity, to remove it from the other albums that were associated with A Hard Day's Night. The Beatles more or less wrote that stuff, and they put it together in a thematic way. If it wasn't exactly a theme album, the songs made a lot of sense in the way that the Beatles were writing them. And if you heard them in the correct order, as you were hearing them in Great Britain, you'd get a really good, clear picture of how the band was changing and what was happening and how they were growing and evolving. In America, it was just not quite as obvious because they just messed it up so much. Like this song, like I said, was the final song that appeared on the British version of the album A Hard Day's Night. In America, that album didn't even exist. We had A Hard Day's Night soundtrack that featured only songs from the movie, of which the song was not one of them. Well, in Great Britain, the album had the songs from the movie on side one and all of the songs that were written that could have been used in the movie but were eventually edited out, they were all on side two. Or never even made the final cut. But they were all written by the Beatles, intending them to be for that project. So here it is, this song now being released 6 months out of time sequence on the album Beatles 65 and just ignominiously dropped into the middle of side two. One of their better songs, I believe, too, called I'll Be Back.
You know, if you break my heart, I'll go. But I'll be back again. 'Cause I told you once before goodbye, but I came back again. I love you so, I'm the one who wants you. Yes, I'm the one who wants you. Oh, oh, oh. Could find better things to do than to break my heart again. This time I will try to show that I'm not trying to pretend. I thought that you would realize that if I ran away from you, that you would want me to, that I got a big surprise. Oh, 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 you could find better things to do
and to break my heart again. This time I will try to show that I'm not trying to pretend. I wanna go, but I hate to leave you. You know I hate to leave you. Oh, 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 you. If you break my heart, I'll go, but I'll be back again.
The one thing that's odd or that makes sense about that song being out of place and dropped onto this album rather than on the much more upbeat Hard Day's Night album is that it fits that dark theme of what is on the rest of the record. It just, it has that minor keyed melancholy about it that fits in with songs like, of course, No Reply and I'm a Loser or Babies in Black. Even in that sense, Carl Perkins' song, Honey, Don't, even though it's an upbeat song, lyrically, there's this... I just wonder if there was almost some subliminal thing going on with the band. Now, of course, what Capitol did that didn't happen in Great Britain, as I had mentioned, is Capitol was going to release the singles, of course, here in America, and appreciate and profit from all of the number one hits that the Beatles had as singles. But they weren't going to be foolish enough to leave the single off of the album. So by putting the single on the album, it automatically gave Capitol extra material. This is how they ended up coming up with way more American albums than British albums, by reducing the track listing and putting all the singles onto the albums. In this instance, it was a double-sided hit. I Feel Fine, backed with She's a Woman on the other side, basically a John song backed with a Paul song. Paul already more or less had proven himself quite adept at doing a phenomenal Little Richard interpretation.
Yes.
He had done it a number of times already, most notably, of course, on the Little Richard song, Long Tall Sally. Well, in this instance, he wrote a song for himself where he knew he could utilize that voice again. And he did it on top of something that was fairly clever. At this point in time, the ska thing was happening in Great Britain, but the ska thing had begun to morph a little bit more into something called rock steady, sort of like a more
like
deliberate,
Desmond Decker.
Right, like a more deliberate upbeat version of that, yeah, like a Desmond Decker thing. So Paul basically put that feel on the record, and I mean, I remember when I was a kid, I always had a hard time because the song, the first beats that you hear are upbeats, and you got to wrap your head around that. Because if you're thinking it's a downbeat, it sounds out of time when the band comes in. You got to eventually wrap your head around that. The other thing that Capitol did was they made something which they called a duophonic mix of the record. Not satisfied with the Beatles' own mixed version, they figured that they would be able to create a much more commercial version of a Beatles single by mixing it again themselves, by putting a layer of reverb on top of the whole track. Most people hate it. I don't, maybe it's because I heard it this way first when I was a kid. I love it. I just love
you're a freak.
That echo just basically, it just gets me excited when I hear it. I'm like, ooh, that's cool. Well, take it either way, it's still a great song. Here is She's a Woman.
Yeah.
Some of these singles automatically make me feel like I'm less than 10 years old again. Every time I hear that song, I just feel like a kid.
Aw, that's cute.
I love it. This was definitely one of my favorite Beatles pairings as far as being a dual hit single, both the A side and the B side being phenomenal songs. That being the B side, but still becoming a top 40 hit in its own right. The A side was a song that sort of happened accidentally. The story of its creation is kind of cool. What ended up happening is the Beatles were busy in the studio recording 8 days a week. Another song that was part of the Beatles For Sale album, which is obviously not on this album because we're almost done with the songs on Beatles 65. It's one of the songs that was edited off, which we would hear on Beatles 6 in America. But anyway, that song existed, and they were running through a take of it, and there was a riff in the background of 8 days a week that had that featured more or less an arpeggiated blues thing. And John liked it, and he said, you know what, I'm going to write a song on that riff.
And
everybody's like, you know, go ahead, you do whatever you do that.
you know? Go ahead.
So in the meantime, I mean, this riff, it's not unlike, if you think of, like, for example, the most famous example of it that existed beforehand was Ray Charles' What Did I Say? When he had it on that electric piano. It's one of the first times that anybody had heard an electric piano and the world went crazy. But that boom, doo, 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 that sort of a thing.
Uh-huh.
That was, you know, probably the first example of that. Then there was a song that came up by a guy named Bobby Parker called Watch Your Step, which really just took the exact same note pattern and inverted it a little bit. So that's what John started to do. He started playing with it and moving the notes around just a little bit to find a different way to play it, moving the accents. But it's really the exact same note pattern, the same fundamental
incredible
idea. Cut forward, he would do the exact same trick again on Day Tripper. That's where that riff came from. You just edit out little bits of it, and you end up with da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da. It's What Did I Say? Edited. The Allman Brothers did it with One Way Out. It's the exact... It was probably the most...
Recycled.
Right, real. One of the most recycled riffs of all time. But what's cool is John came up with it, and he basically made that the song. And he came in and he brought it to the band, but it's really funny. When he brought in, apparently what he did was, Ringo was the only person there at the time, and he said to him, I did write a song based on that riff, but it's probably pretty lousy. I don't think it's going to be too good. And John even said to Ringo that I think it's too close to the Ray Charles song, What Did I Say? So we started to play it. Ringo naturally started to play the What Did I Say beat in back of the song. And they did a couple of takes with it. John was playing a semi-acoustic, a hollow body electric guitar, in other words.
Mm-hmm.
And they finished the take. And John, after it was finished, he took his guitar and he leaned it against the amp. And when he did that, it made a howling sound.
Whoa.
Like a, and they're like, whoa, like, you know, feedback.
Yeah, what was that?
And then they're like, John and Paul look at each other. They're like, wait a minute, you know, what if we took that sound and we edited it onto the front of the record? Why don't we keep that? You know, already they're getting experimental, and it's like
right,
a really...
That's crazy.
Like, let's use the feedback as the way we start the record.
To intro it, yeah.
And George Martin's their producer, and he's like, well, yeah, why not? We could do that. The thing is, of course, when they released it to the public, most of the people who were in charge of releasing these things quick called up the label and said, what did you do? You sent us the wrong version of the song. There's feedback in the beginning. And had to convince everybody, no, leave it alone. Leave it there.
It's supposed to be there.
It was one of the Beatles' biggest hits from 1964, and it was at number one as the year 1964 ended. Here's I Feel Fine.
We'll be right back.
the A side to what I consider to be one. Well, it's really funny. You need to say the top five best dual hit records by the Beatles. There's a lot of them, but that's up there. All right, let's end this album with the other Carl Perkins song, sung by George this time. Track that ends the album. Actually, it ended both this and the British album. Everybody's Trying to Be My Baby.
Well, they took some honey from a tree, dressed it up and they called it me. Everybody's trying to be my baby. Everybody's trying to be my baby. Everybody's trying to be my baby now. Woke up last night, 4:30. 50 women knocking on my door. Everybody's trying to be my baby. Everybody's trying to be my baby. Everybody's trying to be my baby now. Last night, I did say late, for a home I had a 19 day. Everybody's trying to be my baby. Everybody's trying to be my baby. Everybody's trying to be my baby now. Last night, I did stay late, for a home had a 19 date. Everybody's trying to be my baby. Everybody's trying to be my baby. Everybody's trying to be my baby now. Well, they took some honey from a tree, dressed it up and they called it me. Everybody's trying to be my baby. Everybody's trying to be my baby. Everybody's trying to be my baby now.
What do you call that ending?
I guess, what do you call it, a tag or a fake ending?
I guess.
Like, but they would do it live. They would sometimes do that over and over again. You know, like it's like just put that last tag on there a couple of times. Like people would clap, do it again. You know, it's fun, kind of funny. Short album, but a great one. And now forgotten, because if you're looking for these songs on vinyl, you'd have to get, you don't have to, but you ought to get the Beatles For Sale album, although that will not contain the hit single. To get the hit single, you got to get the Beatles Past Masters release, which has got all of their non-LP singles in one convenient place. We got time for one more, so what I want to do is, just since we can, I'll play the song that was edited out of the albums and really, oddly, never released by the Beatles in their own time. And it was when all those, I guess the collections came out later, that was compiling alternate takes and rough takes and everything else, a lot of it unlistenable. There was one song in that entire like Beatles anthology collection that really stood out to me as being a song that probably not only could have, but should have been released in the Beatles' time. I thought it was a great rock and roller. And maybe the only reason it didn't make it is because they were being so melancholy at this point in time, because this is an upbeat rocker that sort of, I guess, suggests sort of what they were about before. But you hear John Lennon's jealousy all over this song. It's totally, you know, if anybody's going to write a powerful song about jealousy, John's the guy. Well, anyway, here's that song that was edited out of the Beatles catalog until many years later, called Leave My Kitten Alone. Take care, everybody. See you on Friday.
Believe. leave her alone. You better leave.
Leave her alone.